Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Friday, September 12th, and the nation is still reeling from the just absolutely tragic assassination of Charlie Kirk, and I'm still, quite frankly, processing my own thoughts and grief, and It's a total nightmare. And I've spoken with so many friends and AFR listeners around the country who feel the same way and who just can't believe that this nightmare is reality. I think we all were hoping yesterday that we all just woke up to the same total nightmare and that it wasn't actually real. But we saw some incredible images yesterday as Vice President J.D. Vance helps carry the casket of Charlie Kirk back to his home in Arizona, and Second Lady Usha Vance with his Charlie's wife, Erica Kirk, holding hands as they descended the steps of Air Force Two, and just seeing the friendship, because this is someone who at this moment isn't just a vice president, but he's truly honoring a friend, and I really, really respect J.D. Vance for that and for that assistance. And the manhunt continues for the assassin, and I think everyone listening wants to see this evil person brought to the most justice possible. I am 100% for the death penalty. I have been before this case, and I think that this is one of those moments where, as the governor of Utah said, this is why we have the death penalty. But first, we need to find the perpetrator. So let's welcome in our first guest, Scott Uhlinger, who's a former CIA officer, for more on the updates on the manhunt. Scott, where are we at this moment, and how long do you anticipate for the FBI and law enforcement to try to find this individual?
Well, I think that it'll be done within the next few days or so. Certainly, I guess they're putting the effort into it. There's been talk about, and I remain skeptical, but there's been a lot of talk. You know, they found the weapon, which was a 30-06 bolt action rifle. And so there has been a lot of speculation on the internet about things like a professional shooter and stuff. But it does seem that, you know, a 200-yard shot is not outside of the possibility of somebody who's a skilled hunter, for example. So the idea of a professional killer is not something we should be immediately going down that path. But on the other hand, there are some other things, you know, like talk about, is it a conspiracy? Because there were several people in the audience who very quickly seemed to adopt a part and say I did it, or that kind of thing. There was some guy named Zinn who was grabbed, an older, a 70-year-old man or so, in the crowd. And so, what prior knowledge did he have? But it is apparent that regardless of, you know, finding the individual, I think even more important is that they've got, and I think that this is something that the administration may be working on. You know, they've been silent for a couple of days, and I think they'll be silent for a few more days to, come up with the game plan. But they need to pursue RICO charges against a lot of these billionaires and these foundations and stuff that have been funneling money to extremist causes. they have, the government already has kind of proof. I mean, I've seen it in the last, you know, like with Elon Musk and stuff. We've already seen like the numerous ties that exist to like just government funding, funneling money to organizations, which are then funneling money to basically domestic Black Lives Matter and domestic terrorist operations. RICO charges allows you to go after the guy who ordered the murder rather than just the murderer himself. And I think they need to ruthlessly go after this, because if we're talking about just catching the guy who shot him, that is not the major problem. The major problem is that money is driving, you know, funding is driving this domestic terrorist movement. And we're not going to have a country unless we deal with it, no matter how painful that is.
And that's such a great point. And just breaking moments ago, President Trump on Fox and Friends reveals that he says, quote, "I think with a high degree of certainty, we have him," meaning Charlie's killer, "in custody. Everyone did a great job." So they at least have another person of interest or a suspect in custody. Obviously, as you know, Scott Uhlinger and those who have been following, there have been two others that were previously persons of interest that then ultimately were released. So hopefully this individual that they now have in custody is the actual perpetrator. But to your earlier point, this is something that that isn't just enough to have the one individual. Obviously, yes, that's the main person that we want to have in custody and have the harshest punishment of justice for this. But also we need to look at the broader picture here. And so, you know, if this isn't someone who it comes out, you know, is a professional hit job, if this is just someone who is, you know, yet another trans ideologist motivated, obviously, by left-wing violence. But he apparently, if this comes out that he acted alone, how does this fit, though, into what you're talking about with the broader problem of funded violence? Because we are seeing a really alarming rise of these types of shootings, and the country just can't stand for it.
That's right. I mean, in some way, exactly. And I mean, for example, something I haven't checked into, but yesterday, and I have a friend who's I went to the Merchant Marine Academy with my friend. His daughter goes to the Naval Academy. Yesterday, there was a lockdown, and there was a shooting at the Naval Academy. Now, I haven't seen much about that. I think somebody may have been at least injured. And then there was another shooting. This is yesterday at UMass in Boston. So, like, what about those perpetrators? I mean, again, I'll lay the odds 80% that they're another lib psycho. So what I'm saying is we are almost on the verge of civil war here. These people have got to be stopped. And I don't care what Trump has to do, because here's the other thing. 80% of the American public understand this is out of control and will support the president. I want to talk about mirror imaging for a minute. And this is something that I think now it's finally done. But, you know, for about 5 years, me and a lot of other people, of course, have been seeing that, look, these people want to kill you and me. And, you know, you say that at parties and, okay, it's, you know, Scott saying his usual thing, that kind of hyperbole. Okay, fine. And why does that happen? Because of mirror imaging, which is an intelligence term. And that is, you tend to think that other people think like you. When you're a decent, God-fearing, conservative American, it is very hard for you to understand that there are people that want to kill you simply because of what you believe. And I think that that has changed now. Americans have woken up and understand that if they can kill Charlie Kirk, a God-fearing family man who never was aggressive in any way, then certainly they can target you, me, and every listener who's listening right now. And I think people have finally gotten that message, that that is the God's honest truth. And the other side is also true, however, and that is the mirror imaging of the average communist liberal. And that is that these people are morally damaged. They've got no soul. There is no Holy Spirit within them. And all they do is hate. And so they are paranoid. Because, again, whatever they accuse us of is what they themselves are guilty of. They, because they have menace in their hearts and hate us, they believe that we hate them. So, well, I'm only killing them because, well, they're going to kill me anyway. See, so they're doing the same mirror imaging, a sick negative image of the mirror imaging that we do, although I think we're finally being cured. You know, because the whole point of, you know, in the last 5 years or so, right, the whole point of them, of the liberal communists, labeling speech as violence was always to justify violence against speech. And that's exactly what we've seen.
And yeah, it really is the ideology of the left that however they have to silence opposition, whether in whatever manner, whether it be intimidation escalating to, you know, lawfare escalating to, these major arrests of Christians and pro-lifers that we saw during the Biden administration, now to the escalation of two assassination attempts against President Trump, and now the actual assassination of Charlie Kirk. I mean, it just continues to escalate. And the question, though, is, okay, we recognize this, and I think all of us are pausing to say, okay, there's a very real, tangible threat that we felt from lawfare for a while, but now that we are tangibly feeling in terms of just overall public safety, but what do we do about it in real time when it feels like our elected officials on the right are maybe talking a lot of rhetoric, but they're not actually implementing any kinds of protections and accountability for the perpetrators?
Right. One thing is, you know, I'm an intel officer. So unfortunately, what I'm used to doing sometimes and doing a lot of news and commentary is I get to deliver the bad news to people, or the news is the truth is as I believe it is. And sometimes it doesn't sit well with people, but that's that, because the truth is the truth. I would recommend for all listeners should become familiar with firearms. If you don't have a firearm, I'd look at obtaining one legally, and I would look at receiving the training that you need to receive to be confident in carrying the firearm if you belong in a state that allows concealed carry. Now, I live in Pennsylvania, which allows concealed carry, and every single time I leave the house, I am carrying a firearm. I think it's highly, and I do that with what thought, not because of some, you know, lunatic. I think it's highly unlikely that I will be dragged into something that would have me use my firearm. But I tend to think more as a shepherd dog guarding the flock. It may be that I may be called upon by God to defend other people when I am out and about. I may see something where somebody is being victimized or attacked that I will be able to aid them. That is what I think is the more likely scenario. But people have to be prepared for this violence. And so for those who are not familiar with firearms, I would recommend that they become more familiar with them. And then other common sense practices around the house as far as security goes. A rather troubling thing I read, and it's somebody who was Serbian, who had lived through the Serbian, the independence wars of Yugoslavia, had written that they feel very nervous now because there was a lot of rhetoric in Serbia and Croatia as the wars of independence were getting ready to happen. There was a lot of talk, but there was a feeling of, well, it's a little farther down the line. And what wound up provoking like the war that was between Croatia and Serbia was a simple bus accident, because the tensions had been raised so high. All it took was a bus accident for a firefight to ensue, and then literally a full-blown war started the next day. So it's kind of hard to imagine that kind of scenario in the United States, but there could be some widespread displays of violence that could bubble up very suddenly. And I, for one, am not going to be caught up in something like that. And I am going to be prepared for that. Some people may view that as paranoid, but I think in today's world, and I think most people can agree that this is a significant event. I lived through 9/11. I was in a CIA training camp on 9/11. So I believe that this is like the seminal event since 9/11. Everything has changed now, and people better be ready for what's going to come.
Wow. And what a statement from Scott Uhlinger this morning. Our regular listeners, you know his background, know his expertise. And I think that is the sentiment that this is the seminal event since 9/11. And oddly was the day before the 24th anniversary of 9/11. And so, the parallels and all of the memorials on the same day yesterday. What a powerful statement, and your admonition that it isn't paranoia, it's preparation. And we would be wise as Christians and simply as individuals, as members of our family, a lot of us who are heads of the household, we need to take action to simply be prepared for the times. And that includes not only understanding how to speak truth in love, and we often talk about being prepared to give a response for the hope that lies within us. We also need to be prepared in a safety way to meet the challenges of the times. And Scott, the last question before I let you go, and I so appreciate your time this morning. Speaking of safety, there have been a number of people who were really shocked, I think, that Charlie didn't have a higher level of security. And, some are saying, well, this is a campus. They didn't want to have, kind of a bigger presence of kind of intimidation for some of the students to come out, some of these things. Now that conservatives should look at whether or not we can actually have open outdoor events in light of this. With some of those types of questions, do you think that in the context, if Charlie had more security, this tragedy may have been prevented? I mean, drones after Butler seems like a reasonable thing, but nobody really thought that somebody like him would be targeted. And where do you think security for conservatives goes from here in terms of public events?
Well, I guess as far as security precautions, I guess modern technology such as drones should be employed because it's a low-cost solution. But Charlie did have a security detail, and he was wearing a bulletproof vest. I did read one thing that said that it seems that the bullet ricocheted, it bounced, it hit, like it impacted maybe the upper left corner of the bulletproof vest, and then glanced off and hit him in the neck. In other words, it was not a direct neck shot, as horrible as it is to say that. But the other thing that is understood that, again, security is important, but it is not the answer to this violence, because the bottom line is, if somebody is determined or some group is determined to target a person, a lot of times all the security in the world is not going to be effective. It's eventually it's going to leak through. Eventually the leaker is going to get through. And so, he had a security detail, but of course it was not to the level of Secret Service protection, but it shows you that a determined attacker can get through. And so I believe that there already have been several noted conservative speakers who say that they're going to continue speaking on campus. I believe in the short term, that in the short to medium term, that will be fairly safe because of what has already happened, and there will be heightened precautions. And so I think that we'll be okay for the speakers speaking in the next 6 months, I would say. But it's like kind of like lightning doesn't strike twice, but after about 6 months, then you got to start re-questioning, okay, should we continue speaking on campuses, et cetera? But like I said, the most frightening thing about this whole thing, and again, back to why I carry all the time, is the fact that, remember, 50% of all Democrats believed, this is before this assassination, believed in violence against Trump or Musk. So that's 25% of the population. That's 1 in 4 people you're walking by all day think it's okay to murder sometimes, to murder a president. Now, that's a sick figure. And there is an enormous amount of acceptance of violence. How many liberals, I mean, I've been on social media, you know, a lot for the last 2 days. There are thousands of cases of liberals celebrating this. They are celebrating the death of a Christian man. And that is the most ghoulish thing of all. And it shows you that we live in two Americas. There is no compromising with these anti-Christian monsters. You cannot compromise. You can't reach across the aisle. This is a problem with both sides. It's a load of garbage. It isn't both sides. It's all one side. And so that's why you've got to keep your head on a swivel, because there are so many people, including, you know, probably my neighbor diagonally across the street, I bet you is one of the people that was glad that the man was assassinated. And that is a chilling thought that we share in America with people like that.
Yeah, so well said. And we have to take a break here, Scott Uhlinger. There's so much more I would want to ask you, and hopefully we'll have you back on next week as all of this continues. But you're absolutely right. We can't share a country and the values that are premised on more speech is better. And, you know, Charlie was out there literally, his tent says, prove me wrong, and had an open mic and said, if you disagree with me, come to the front. I want to talk. And that was the motivation for silencing him. I mean, it's utterly disgusting. It has no place in our society. And as the Time cover that I'm looking at says, just one word, enough. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. I want you to picture this. Her name is Kayla. She is 17, alone, terrified, and pregnant. Sitting in a clinic, tears blurring, thinking abortion is her only option. Until she was offered a free ultrasound, paid for by a hero just like you. The moment Kayla heard her baby's heartbeat, the decision was made. And today, her little baby boy, Gabriel, is thriving because preborn walked with Kayla every step of the way. Now multiply that by 38,000. That's how many babies preborn has helped save just this year. How many mothers preborn has come alongside with practical and spiritual resources to make motherhood possible. But here's the most important thing you will hear today. Their goal is to save 70,000 babies by the end of the year. And they can't do that without us. Every $28 provides that ultrasound, the moment everything changes. Will you be the reason the next Kayla chooses life? The reason Gabriel fulfills his destiny? To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or donate securely at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and all of us are still dealing with the shock and horror of the murder of our friend Charlie Kirk, and I want to say thank you so much to the AFR listeners who reached out through email to share your thoughts and your reflections on either listening to Charlie Kirk or your thoughts on the direction of this country in this moment, because I think it's really important to process this from a biblical view. And as Scott Uhlinger just said, and I think very profoundly, that this is the seminal moment since 9/11, and processing that and what it means for the future and what it means for our witness is so important. And I was speaking with a lot of people actually yesterday as I was processing my own thoughts and reflections of the death of my friend. And my cousin, actually, we have a girls group chat that I love. And my cousin, we were talking about, you know, why Charlie? Why would Charlie be the one who is targeted in this moment. And, you know, she said something I thought was also equally profound. And she said, you know, this is the person who is going in shaping the hearts and minds and changing the minds of young men in particular on college campuses, the very same demographic that the left is saying you should become women, you should not get married, you shouldn't have kids, you should live for yourself, you should become either the patriarchal machismo bros or the effeminate, you know, actual trying to become a woman. And for Charlie being on the front lines, shaping the next generation that is the ripest target for the demonic left, it is no wonder he was the prime target. And I think that that is so accurate and so true. And I want to reflect on this with our good friend Ryan Helfenbein, who is my next guest this morning, because he and I shared a unique, I think, friendship with Charlie because of our interactions with Liberty University and the fellowship there. And before we welcome him on, though, I want to read just one listener's comment, and I wish I could read so many more. Thank you again to our listeners for writing in and expressing your prayer and your sincere grief for Erica, and just so many wonderful sentiments. But I want to read this email from a listener named Mark. He says this, praying for you and others that have a personal relationship with Charlie Kirk. I am a 66-year-old male. At night, I watch a variety of reels on YouTube as I get sleepy. I don't set out to view any person or point of view, but in actual practice, I expect that 80 to 90% of what I watch is when Charlie Kirk is interacting with college students. Why? I had not thought about it before his murder yesterday. Here are my thoughts today. I admire that his Christian faith was always on display and unequivocal. I marvel at his intellect and knowledge, biblical and secular, especially for someone of his age and non-formal education. But what I admire, or envy, the most was his ability to keep his cool and treat people with respect even when many did not deserve it. I am sick, which is not typical for me when a public figure dies. I am sick of a country who at the highest levels of politics and journalism think it's okay to shut down speech. For example, debanking, cancel, you must take the jab, etc. Yes, that's political. It's also the truth. I am sick for a country whose individuals, I pray Charlie's death is not a group effort, cannot interact with someone who invites them to speak but instead argues with a bullet. I am sick of the ignorant, idiotic, and insensitive comments, not a strong enough word, by some post-assassination. I am sick that Charlie Kirk will no longer be able to continue the tremendous impact he has had on our country, especially younger folks. He taught them to investigate, analyze, and make reasoned decisions. It is no small task to undo that trash that the NEA pushes. There I go again, being political. How has not talking about religion and politics worked out for us? I am sick that my grandchildren will have to learn about Charlie Kirk from books and videos. But mostly, I am sick for Erica Kirk and the Kirk children. My prayer is that this event will be a catalyst on multiple levels, that it causes those that do not know of Charlie Kirk to check him out and learn of his positions on life, eternal life, patriotism, and politics, that emboldens those who know of Charlie, believers and patriots, to get involved by engaging others with grace and truth, that local, state, and national leadership would become filled with men and women who put others' interests before their own interest. As I was driving home today, I had the following thoughts about others who have lost their physical lives by confronting the evil of their time. John the Baptist, Jesus Christ, Stephen, the biblical apostles, William Wilberforce, Abraham Lincoln, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, Charlie Kirk. I do not think it's hyperbole to place Charlie Kirk in this group. They all fought a spiritual battle, and all but Wilberforce paid with their physical lives. I am grateful that God became a man in the person of Jesus Christ, and that his death was short-lived, overcoming death on our behalf.
I'm grateful that Charlie Kirk knew this, accepted this, and proclaimed this. I pray that Charlie's role in stemming the tide of socialism and government overreach when he lived is not a temporary impact, but becomes a catalyst, a platform for restoring our country to its biblical roots. In short, I pray that what was intended for evil, God will use for good, and this would be a catalyst for revival. Thanks. Thank you, Mark. What a wonderful prayer. And let's welcome in Ryan Helfenbein, who's the Vice President of Communications at Liberty University, a very dear friend to Charlie Kirk, very dear friend to me as well, and is the Executive Director of the Now Standing for Freedom Center. And Ryan, I know that this has touched you and your family personally, as well as you knew Charlie for longer than I did. And your thoughts on all of this morning.
Wow. I just, that was so beautifully written and framed, Jenna. I know we're all grieving. You're grieving. I'm grieving. My family, my two oldest children knew Charlie and Erica. And, you know, we've been communicating with their family before this happened, you know, before this tragedy happened. Jenna, I was with Charlie just less than a week ago, just days before this happened. We were in South Korea preaching at an event, speaking at an event in front of thousands of Gen Z Koreans who are hungry for faith. They're hungry for freedom. They're in a situation right now where the government is harassing and pressuring churches and arresting their leaders. And Charlie was there trying to rally up that generation just to take a stand for truth, to be bold. And Jenna, you know, it's crazy to think, but we were in that moment praying for safety, praying for security, thinking, you know, if something were to happen, this would be the context, you know, this would be the situation in a foreign country, you know, in a place that is not quite as secure, in a place where the government is not necessarily on your side. And we thought about that. And Charlie has always been bold. And what a legacy he has left. His life cut dramatically short. You know, you and I both grieve the loss of two heroes this year. Dr. James Dobson and Johnny Mack, John MacArthur. Knowing both of those men and men who live long, full lives. And I'm so grateful to God for them. Here Charlie is at 31 years of age, and his life was cut short, dramatically short. And yet, I believe his legacy has just begun. I really do. I'm so hopeful for the future, for this generation, especially Gen Z, turning the hearts of the people back to God. I really am praying for revival in this country, and I do believe that Charlie is a catalyst for that very thing to happen.
I hope and pray that that's true. And, you know, you and I hadn't talked about that prior to coming on air, but I was saying this to someone else last night, that that exact sentiment, that it is just horrible to have lost John MacArthur, Dr. Dobson, and now Charlie Kirk. It feels like just the wave of all of that and the loss. I mean, it was just a few weeks ago that we were at the memorial service for Pastor John, and yet it is, and it does feel so different with Charlie's home going to the Lord, because his life was so dramatically cut off, unlike Pastor John, who saw his grandchildren. Who preached to the very last that he could. I mean, with that expression of his son saying that even when he was in hospice, in the hospital, was still evangelizing and ministering to the nurses. I mean, literally till the last. And Charlie, to his last, was also evangelizing, but his last came too soon. And so many people are asking that question that we have asked, I think, since the Garden of Eden. Why does God tarry, and how can this type of evil still persist?
I think that's the, question. That is the question every time tragedy strikes, every time evil claims another life. That's the question we ask, is, you know, why is there so much evil in the world? Why do bad things happen like this? And I think it's an important reminder that, you know, we absolutely live in a fallen world. This was the first for me and the first for you. No, I mean, you might have known others, but this is the first time that I had ever seen a friend get assassinated. So when I see tragedy, oftentimes it's happening, Jenna, to people that I don't know, you know, that poor girl on that train, you know, just earlier this week. Just last week, whose life was taken from her. I didn't know her. It was tragic, but I didn't know her. I knew Charlie Kirk. And, you know, when evil like that happens, it is a reminder that sin is sick, sin is wicked. But there is only one good person, only one, who died. And his name is Jesus Christ. Only one good person. No one is good, no, not one. We live in a sinful and fallen world. He was truly innocent blood. And we know what the Bible says about all having sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, that the wages of sin are death. We deserve hell, but God stepped in the way. There's another kind of bullet, and that's the bullet of justice, God's justice. And Jesus stepped in the way of that bullet. And Jesus stepped in the way, and he took the wrath of God on our behalf. And so this is a moment of reflection. There are a lot of folks that are hurting and they're grieving, and I think this is a moment just to take inventory, spiritual inventory, and say, where do I stand with God? Am I ready? Am I ready to face eternity? Am I ready to meet my Maker? Charlie was ready. Charlie had made his peace with God through Jesus Christ. And I think that's the thing. I think that's the question we all need to ask. And I think this is a perfect moment where we can get that question of eternity settled in our hearts. And so that's my encouragement to any listener today, that you can know that you have peace and joy and fulfillment in the Lord because of what Christ has done. And, you know, Charlie wanted to be remembered for that. Jenna, you and I knew Charlie, you know, personally, had so many conversations with him. And he was bold. He was courageous. He'd be the first to say, I'm not perfect. You know, he was saying that to me a few days ago, that he said, you know, I've made mistakes. And fascinating. I've never seen him lose a debate. But he was saying to me, you know, I've lost more debates than I can count. Charlie was just, he didn't care about being embarrassed. He didn't care about what people would think if he said something incorrectly or if it wasn't a salient point. He was constantly learning. He was constantly growing. He was constant. His faith was not static. He was a man on a mission. And I admire that courage that he had. I think for so many people, today, myself included, we're worried about what others might think about us. Charlie wasn't worried about that. And I think at the end of the day, it was his faith that gave him that courage. And I've said often, you've heard me say it, you know, forgiven people are fearless. And they walk with a certain kind of confidence, a confidence in God, not a confidence in self. But they know they're forgiven and they stand upright because of what Christ has done for them. And so I just think it's a remarkable life that Charlie has lived. I think that his legacy continues. I don't think that I don't think that there's any stopping the movement that was started by him, that he was a catalyst for. I think that that will only grow.
So well said, Ryan. And we'll take our last break here and come back. But, you know, that question of, are you ready to die, is the same question that was actually asked at Pastor John's memorial by one of his sons who had a really sincere health crisis, and said that his dad asked him that, you know, you wouldn't think of asking a teenager, but you wouldn't think of asking that of a 31-year-old either. And I think all of us today need to stop and ask that question. Are we ready to die? Because life can be snuffed out in an instant, but we have to know to where we are going and where we will spend eternity. And Charlie had faith in action, as Hebrews 11 says. Now, faith is the confidence in what we hope for and the assurance about what we do not see. And Charlie lived his faith in action. And we'll be right back with more to talk about the life and legacy of Charlie Kirk.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and we are speaking about the life and legacy of Charlie Kirk and his faithful testimony to the truth of the gospel of Christ, which meant more to him than anything and means more to us than anything, because it is the truth and it is faith in action. And that is exactly what Hebrews 11 and 12 says. And we left the last segment with Ryan Helfenbein, who's the Vice President of Communications at Liberty University and the Executive Director of the Standing for Freedom Center, and dear friend of Charlie Kirk and of mine as well, with talking about Hebrews 11 and faith in action that Charlie so clearly displayed. And that was his testimony. He testified daily to the truth and the transformation of the gospel of Christ in his own life. And that is the confidence that he has. And as the writer of Hebrews says, now faith is the confidence in what we hope for and the assurance about what we do not see. And it goes on and on to list by faith all of those who have gone before us in faith, how they lived their lives believing in the truth and the promises of God and acting on it. Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, all these people, by faith, while they were still living, by faith, when they died, they didn't receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting they were foreigners and strangers on earth. And instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, and he's prepared a city for them. Goes on to talk about Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, by faith, Moses, by faith, by faith, by faith. All of these were commended for their faith. And then Hebrews 12 goes on to say, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. Let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and finisher, the perfecter of our faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, that you will not grow weary and lose heart. And Ryan, I think that Charlie is now among the great cloud of witnesses, like John MacArthur, like Dr. Dobson, like so many others, but in just this, the last couple of months that we have lost, but who are still providing their testimony that by faith they lived, and as they died became part of that great cloud of witnesses that has gone before to encourage us while we are still living to throw off everything that hinders us and run our race with perseverance.
So well said. I think of that one part of Hebrews 11, and you even shared an article with me. These men and even women, they suffered and died for the faith. They greeted the promises of God from afar, and they were men for whom the world was not worthy. you know, that is a kind of a saintly qualification that you say only by Christ could that be true of any of us. And I put Charlie in that category. And I don't want to break, this is such a sensitive moment, but I do want to point something out, Jenna, and for your AFR listeners. There is today, there's a pocket, a segment of the evangelical world that still does not grasp or fully understand Charlie's impact and influence in the public square, and have withheld praise, have withheld, you know, their stamp of approval. And it's truly tragic to think that there are those within the church today that don't believe that Charlie's legacy was fully legitimized because, you know, he didn't have a seminary background or seminary training. You know, he wasn't a part of some major denomination. You know, his methodologies and strategies were somewhat unorthodox. He's referred to by some as a provocateur. Charlie was not an agitprop. Charlie was not somebody that incited the hostility against him. He did not deserve what had happened. And it's bad enough when those kinds of thoughts come from the left, but they also come from our own circles, that there are people who think that you need to be Millie-mouthed or you need to be Fred Rogers. And I'm just so thankful that Charlie was able to look past those voices, because I think if he had been raised up or discipled by them, he never would have had impact on the world. And so I say that to say, you know, drawing these comparisons, that Dobson had a ministry that looked a certain kind of way, John MacArthur a ministry that looked a different kind of way, and then there's Charlie Kirk. And no one can deny the ministry impact that he had for Christ and for his kingdom. When I met Charlie 6 years ago, he was a little bit more libertarian. He didn't fully embrace social conservatism in the way that he absolutely defended it up until the point of his death. It was different. He was growing in his faith. He was growing in his knowledge of the Lord. I never questioned whether he was a Christian ever, but I knew that when he got married to Erica, and when he had those precious kids, he continued to grow in his faith and his understanding. And as he did, man, he became an articulate voice. He became a force in this young generation, defending traditional marriage, defending life, speaking about God's design for sexuality. And he railed against the promiscuity culture. Charlie was a great voice of moral clarity up into the end. And so I'm so grateful for that. And I think that there's folks today that can point to either they themselves or someone they know, as a result of being challenged, their minds and their hearts were changed because of Charlie's impact, that they came to faith in Christ because of what Charlie said. And that's what I'm going to remember most about my friend. That's what I'm going to remember most, is that he wasn't there to own the libs. He was there to change hearts and minds. It wasn't about winning a debate. It was about winning souls. It was about winning people. When you can all of a sudden make your enemy your friend by winning them, oh my goodness, that's the heart of the gospel. That's what we want to see.
Amen. And let us go and do likewise and remember all of these life lessons that Charlie was still learning, that we should still be growing in our faith every moment that we're here, and we can make mistakes and we can continue to learn. We don't have to be perfect, but that the goal should always be to win souls for the kingdom and to continue to struggle against sin and run our race well, the race that's marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. Ryan, thank you so much for joining me this morning. Let's continue to pray for Erica and his family. You can always reach me and my team, jenna@afr.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.